You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Rommel. It's a Friday, just hours away from when Miami tips off against the Brooklyn Nets, but I thought it'd be worth recording a special episode of today's show just to talk about the latest news, go into some potential trade options, and to talk about the latest involving Jimmy Butler and the trash over in Indiana, TJ Warren. Either way, the news revolves Justice Winslow. Unfortunately, following his multi-game absence due to a back injury, he returned to action on Wednesday night against the Indiana Pacers. But before today's shoot-around in Brooklyn, Eric Spoelstra said the following about Winslow. It didn't respond the way we would have liked, so we're going to take a step back. But certainly, we don't feel comfortable, and he doesn't feel comfortable about playing Friday night. So Winslow is listed as out on Friday versus the Nets because of that lingering back issue. And there seems to be a lot of talk about what's going on with the injury, what it means, and whether or not there might be some things going on behind the scenes there. First and foremost, I don't know that we're getting the full picture regarding the extent of that injury. We've heard, or some people have put out there on the Twitterverse, that reporters are getting information about the injury, and that they're open to subjective interpretation about what might be happening with Winslow. I think the first thing people are considering is whether or not the injury is as severe as it might be, that perhaps Winslow wants to play. Let's get that out of the way. Winslow absolutely wants to play, but at the same time, he's not being allowed to because of the injury. Now, whether or not that's because Miami is being cautious, and by Miami, I mean the Heat training staff and also the coaching staff, and perhaps even the front office. But is he going to be traded as a result? I think that's what a lot of people think, is that because he's being sat out, he's going to be available for a trade. I think Miami would absolutely love to move Winslow if they can get the right player in exchange. I don't think they want to give up on Winslow just yet. You were willing to trade Goran Dragic over the summer. As great as Goran's been this season, and we all forget this, just a few months ago, Miami and Pat Riley was going to send Goran Dragic for cap space, basically, in effect, to Dallas. And Dallas, thankfully, pulled out of the deal. They're more than willing to trade a 34-year-old point guard who may have lingering knee issues for the rest of his career, and they were going to move away from him. Why? Because they had Justice Winslow. He was their point guard of the future. So I think we've forgotten this as people are looking at the injury and what it means and whether or not he's fallen apart as a player. I think there's still value there. I talked about this in the last show. He's a great defensive player. He can guard 1 through 5, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think he's a very, very good playmaker and passer. I think his offense is still a work in progress, and there's still hope that he can become a decent, reliable offensive player. There's also the reality that maybe he just doesn't need to. On a team with Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn and, even to some extent Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo and all the other scorers, natural scorers and capable scorers on this team, Justice doesn't necessarily need to put up 15 points per game. We'd all like to see that, but that's not the reality. There's only so many shots available to everybody, and if Justice can just be a 37% shooter from three-point range, and I think that's realistic, that's an attainable goal, then at least defenses can't sag off him completely and make things uncomfortable for whoever he's sharing the floor with. Either way, let's not get into that too deeply. It's about this injury and what's going on there, and whether or not the Heat front office might be shelving him because of a trade. I don't see that being the case. I think they still have faith in his ability to be a contributor. He's young. He's under a decent contract. I think they would move him for the right player. I just don't know that right player is available. And I don't think that there's necessarily any friction between Winslow and the front office. I think if he's not comfortable playing, if he doesn't want to aggravate it, then why force him out there? The team is winning. They were winning without him. They won with him the other night. They will continue to win. He does provide something of value, but this team is, thankfully, good enough where it doesn't matter. I remember last year, and it's not that far ago, last season, the season before that, Miami's scoring by committee approach was so tenuous. It was so delicate that if one player, whether it was Tyler Johnson or Josh Richardson or Justice or anybody, didn't score their average of 15 points per game, Miami's offense just couldn't scrape by with enough points. This offense is not like that. We have won a shitload of games without Jimmy Butler scoring at his career averages. Like, that is impressive as hell. He's shooting a lot from the line. He's making a lot from the line. But his shooting has been bad, and I think that's understating it, but I think he's deserving of the benefit of the doubt. Either way, this offense is still capable. This has turned into a really potent offense because of guys like Nunn and Hero and Adebayo and Goron coming off the bench, and the fact that we're getting contributions from guys like Derrick Jones Jr. and others. So it doesn't rely on any one player because there are so many players that can contribute at a fairly high level. This is not like those offenses last year where if you were all of a sudden, if Tyler Johnson had an off night, you were going to wind up being 4 points shy of a victory. This team can explode for 120 points as they have over the last few games because they are that good offensively, because they have that kind of scoring potency. And any one of these players can go off for, you know, 25, 30 points per night, and that's enough. That's the kind of offense you need to have. Like, it's not a Giannis Antetokounmpo or a James Harden. You're not going to get 55 out of them. They're not going to have 10 of 15 shooting from three-point range, because I think this is much more democratic as far as the offense and the scoring and shooting is concerned. But you have enough offense to go around where you can put up a lot of points. You can have a number of different sources available for those points, and so you don't necessarily need Justice to be a high potent scorer. Either way, about the injury, I'm not concerned. I've been pretty consistent about this. I'm not concerned about the injury. I think there's no need to rush him back. He's young, but at the same time, my bigger overall issue is whether or not Miami is having, as a training staff, difficulty in assessing what the nature of this injury is. Remember, it was originally listed as some kind of, well, I don't remember exactly what it was called. I'm drawing a blank here. A month or two ago, it was something else. And then it was listed as a back bone bruise. And then, you know, now we're not quite sure what's going on. So either way, they're either not assessing it correctly or they're withholding information. That is a little sketchy, and I hate to see it, but I think it's also part of team culture. I think what we're seeing is also the Heat love to be able to have guys push through injury, and I think they tried to do that with Dion a couple years ago, that they didn't believe that the ankle injury was as severe as it was, that his comeback was not necessarily hindered and he didn't require surgery. I'll never forget. And maybe for older listeners who grew up in South Florida and grew up with Don Shula, his explanation about if you're hurt or if you're injured. If you're injured, you can't be available to play. But if you're hurt, you get up like everybody else. Everybody on this roster is hurt. You get up, you go on, play. That was his assessment. And that was football. And that's a lot of what, you know, drives sports in general, is the ability to just push through injury and continue to play and produce at a high level. And I think fans love that. The Heat as an organization love that, your ability to rise above it, to push through and everything else. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's in your best interest to do so. And I think they would prefer if Justice Winslow was not giving up or not breaking down as easily. But he has a lingering back issue, and you don't want to take any chances because it could become something much more severe. Either way, he's not available. We'll have to stay and monitor this progress and see whether or not he's available at some point in the future. Obviously, he'd have a third game on their road trip, and he'll be out for that as well. So we'll just have to stay tuned and see if anything changes and whether or not he is available for trade. But we'll talk about the latest in the Jimmy Butler saga with TJ Warren. You're listening to Locked On Heat. About the possibility of Andre Iguodala and the beef between former OKC greats in the next segment, but I wanted to get into what's going on with Jimmy Butler and TJ Warren. You know, it's so funny seeing the kind of exchange that we do on Twitter. Jimmy got into it with TJ Warren, and they were both fined. The NBA announced that Jimmy Butler was fined $35,000 for a social media post, and of course for his altercation with Warren during the Pacers game. And Butler was fined $35,000. T.J. Warren was fined $25,000 because there was no retaliation via social media or anything like that. Either way, a lot of Heat players came to the defense of Jimmy Butler. They posted some things. Even Derrick Jones Jr., who was a former teammate of T.J. Warren in Phoenix's, came to his current teammate's defense rather than his former teammate's defense. And so, you know, I don't think either of them should have been fined, to be honest with you. I know what the NBA is trying to do. They're trying to make things clean. I think a lot of people like that kind of tension and that energy and everything else. And I mean, it's T.J. Warren. Should we be caring about what happens to T.J. Warren? I don't know why the league is so protective of him. And, you know, Jimmy Butler is a star, and I think he shouldn't have been fined either, to be honest. I don't think either of them should have been fined. They just talked some shit, and everybody moves on. And I don't know why it was as big an issue as it was. It's unfortunate that they felt the need to intercede and find both players and you know, but on the other side of that, T.J. Warren makes significantly less money than Jimmy Butler does. So a $25,000 fine, although $10,000 less, is a much bigger percentage of his salary. He's scheduled to make $10 million this year, so that's a bigger chunk than it is for Jimmy, who makes a lot more than $10 million this year. And so I just look, I found it interesting. I kind of wanted just to talk about it a little bit because you know, the Pacers have gotten very protective of their players. I don't think this is still a rivalry, to be honest with you. I know Eric Spoelstra mentioned that in the last game in Miami between the Pacers and the Heat. I think a lot of Pacers fans want to see it, but is there really a rivalry? Maybe I'm mistaken here, and it's hard because, you know, obviously I can't hear everybody's thoughts on the process, but, you know, the Pacers are a fine team. They've managed to be above 500 for a number of years. They've made the playoffs a number of years, regardless of whether or not they're led by Paul George or Danny Granger or T.J. Warren. They still manage to be a very good team. And, you know, that's a credit to their culture and everything else like that. But they're a good defensive group. But at the, I'm just not sure that Miami is in the same class as the Pacers are right now. The Pacers continuously play above their weight limit, and the Heat are, I think, are a legitimate playoff contending team that can do some damage in the Eastern Conference. I just don't see the Pacers as that, even when they welcome back Victor Oladipo and Malcolm Brogdon. There's this idea about who started it and whether or not Jimmy Butler's a dirty player. It's taken on this incredible life that it shouldn't have. It was a blowout loss for the Pacers. T.J. Warren talks some smack there. And I'm not quite sure exactly what the motivation for him was to get into Jimmy Butler, a far superior player there. Maybe he thinks that there's something to it, but I sincerely doubt it. And look, Jimmy Butler isn't going to back down from anybody. I mean, he said so a million times, and he's backed that up 100 times. You know, he is not the kind of player to avoid confrontation, whether it's with teammates or with opponents or anything like that. You know, and it was just interesting to see Pacers fans rushing to the defense of T.J. Warren and accusing Butler of being an instigator and things of that sort. And there's no doubt that Butler probably knew what was going to happen. And he was a little tense, a little pissed off, and he threw that shoulder in there. And T.J. Warren has to know better. Look, he's a veteran. If he wants to, you know, clap at somebody, he shouldn't. He should have just kept himself quiet there, and maybe he would have avoided the ejection. Maybe he would have avoided the eventual fine, but it took on, a larger life of its own. Now, there was a link to a post on SB Nation's Indy Cornrows, which is the Indiana Pacers site, and a good post by, well, not necessarily a great post, but a fine writer, C. Cooper, who does fantastic work. She does a really great job breaking down mostly Pacers activity and players and rotations and things of that sort. And she does an excellent job as a writer. It was a playful one there about any prior beef between Warren and Butler. And it actually went back to that 1-point win in Miami from a few weeks ago, where towards the end of that game, there was a number of back-and-forth situations there between Butler and Warren. Warren goes at Butler late in the game and draws the foul on Jimmy. That was a little bit suspect there. I don't think it should have been a call. Eric Reed thought it was a legitimate block, and it wound up being called for a foul. Then on the ensuing rebound, they got tangled up. And then on a subsequent play, again, in a very, very tight situation, Butler drives on Warren. Warren flops. It looks like he flops. He falls to the ground, and what should have been a game-winning shot was actually called an offensive foul and a Pacers possession there. So, I guess there might be some tension there. I mean, maybe there was some pre-existing issue between T.J. Warren and Jimmy Butler. I can't imagine that it's been that extensive. I would imagine that T.J. Warren, like a lot of players, is probably looking up to Jimmy Butler and compares himself to that and sees himself as a versatile all-around great. He is not. And, you know, I'm kind of tired of talking about it. It's interesting to see Jimmy circle the upcoming game on March 20th, the next matchup against the Pacers in Indiana, I should add. I imagine Jimmy will be booed rather loudly. And, you know, again, to see his teammates kind of come to his defense was nice to see. I think it shows that Jimmy is a good teammate. As I've said a number of times, he is well-liked in that locker room. I understand why he had issues elsewhere. I think he was pushing guys like Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns in particular, who, you know, just didn't respond to work. I think he was having a hard time motivating players in Chicago. I think he had a hard time motivating players in Philadelphia, too. And I don't think he has to do that here because Miami is a different team altogether. And because they take pride in the kind of work that they're able to do from their young players like Bam Adebayo or Tyler Hero or anybody. You got a veteran like Myers Leonard. You know he loves to do the work. He loves to put that work in. And it shows. And so I think that means a lot to Butler. And he seems happy here, to be honest with you. And I don't think he's going to have any issues in the future. Anyway, moving on, I'll talk about the possibility of Andre Iguodala and the beef between former OKC greats in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. I want to say thank you so much to everybody who's been leaving reviews lately. We finally got over that 200 review mark. So many positive ones. You know, some concerns, mostly about my lack of a co-host. I understand why it could seem that maybe I need a different voice here to kind of compliment me, and it works very well. It has worked in the past, but hopefully I'll be able to provide different points of view so that it won't feel like a glaring omission or need. But either way, thank you so much to everybody who's left a comment or a suggestion, and continue to send those in on iTunes or via Twitter or email at lockedonheat@gmail.com. But moving on, I wanted to talk about Andre Iguodala because, of course, the Winslow news kind of brings up whether or not it's necessary to acquire an additional wing player. Some rumors that Memphis is engaged in talks with Eastern Conference teams to move Andre Iguodala. I think those are kind of, I don't put a lot of stock in them. I think this is trade season, open trade rumor season, and with a month and change to go before the trade deadline, I think a lot of teams will be floating names out there. Miami doesn't work that way. They move in silence. They always had. If you recall the Goran Dragic trade a few years ago, nobody saw this coming, and it was pulled off just minutes before. The Dwayne Wade acquisition from Cleveland a few years ago. I mean, so much has moved in Miami's past. Like, Pat Riley just doesn't do things. He works with the people he feels comfortable with. Unfortunately, nobody in Memphis has that kind of relationship with Riles anymore because the former front office was the one that he engaged in so many talks with. But as far as Iguodala is concerned, he's scheduled to make a lot of money this year. And I just don't see Miami being a natural fit here unless you're going to move either Justice Winslow or another player and maybe even take Iguodala and something else in return. I mean, look, I think Winslow is a fine player. I think I think you'd rather have Winslow on this roster considering his money and his potential. But he also makes a lot of sense for Memphis. And I think he, you know, Iguodala also makes sense in the sense that he's a qualified, capable wing defender. And he can produce in the playoffs. He has a championship experience. He can help this team get over the hump. He is also a very noted worker and a guy who will probably embrace Heat culture. He's also off, so he's been off for a few months. I imagine he's training on his own, obviously, like most players do, but I think he'll come back rejuvenated and contribute. He's talked about wanting to be part of a title-contending team, and Miami doesn't stand out, and they did not stand out when Iguodala was traded to Memphis. And so he was not Miami was not one of those teams linked to Iguodala during the offseason, but I think it makes a lot of sense now. I'm just not sure if you're willing to sacrifice a player like Justice Winslow in order to acquire Andre Iguodala. Now, the other thing is Iguodala's salary is an expiring contract. This is the last year of his deal. And I think he wants to continue playing. So it would be interesting to see whether or not he could come in for 3 months, make an impact here in Miami, and then move on to some other team, maybe sign a 2-year deal elsewhere, maybe even sign a 2-year deal here, maybe a 1-and-1 type contract so it frees up Miami when they eventually go after Giannis Antetokounmpo or Victor Oladipo or some other big-name free agent in 2021. I could see that playing out, and it also fits Iguodala's time frame too. If he signs like a 1-and-1 type deal with a player option in 2021, he could elect to retire at the end of next season. And, you know, who knows, especially if Miami is able to win a title this year. But it's interesting. I like Justice as a person and player. You know, we've seen, I think, the very worst of him and the injuries. And I have a hard time as a person and media person, you know, trying to just move on from these people that you've talked to so many times and you've seen interact in the locker rooms and things of that sort. It's not something that I've, you know, I had a problem with Josh being moved to Philadelphia, even if the return was a player as great as Jimmy Butler. And I'd hate to see it for Justice's sake. If not, you know, for maybe he has a better chance of succeeding elsewhere. And that's the truth. And I could see him being a great complement to Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr. And they've got a good core there, and he could be a really fine addition in Memphis if they eventually moved him there, or, you know, elsewhere, wherever they move him. I hope it's a better opportunity for him if they do wind up trading him. Again, I don't think it's a likely scenario, because I think Miami still has faith in Justice's ability to contribute, and I'm not sure if Andre Iguodala is the player worth moving him for. But moving on, I just want to talk about a little situation going on in the Twitterverse, because it just seems like everybody's engaged in what's happening between Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Durant, former teammates with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Russell Westbrook returned to Oklahoma City for the first time after being traded this past offseason. Thankfully, not traded to Miami, traded to the Houston Rockets and his friend and former teammate, James Harden. And the Houston Rockets made their way to Oklahoma City last night. They suffered a 15-point loss, I believe. And, you know, Kendrick Perkins, who is now a pseudo-personality media person, had some comments about Russell Westbrook being the best player in Oklahoma City history, franchise history, and that's absolute horseshit. Kevin Durant is by far a much better player. And look, I think it's easy to spin the narrative about Westbrook because he was traded, because he chose to take a hell of a lot of money to remain in Oklahoma City after Kevin Durant left there. I don't have a problem with Durant's departure. I know a lot of people did. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think as Heat fans, I don't think you can have a problem with Durant joining Golden State if you don't have a problem with LeBron James joining Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade in Miami. Like, the two are almost equal. I think, look, none other than Gilbert Arenas posted something about it on Instagram about the pressure being put on young players, even fans growing up and watching, you know, people talk about rings and titles, and you see Shaquille O'Neal joking with Charles Barkley about his lack of a title, and Michael Jordan talking about his rings, and Kobe talking about championships and everything else like that. A title, as we've seen in Miami, look, LeBron James led teams from 2010 to 2014. I'll say this, 2011, the Heat were robbed. LeBron James kind of fell apart against the Mavericks. But that team was significantly better than the Mavericks. I don't give a crap what any Dallas Maverick fan says. I mean, that they were a better team or some horse shit like that, it doesn't matter. That was a much better team, Miami was. And they lost the finals so much, not so much as Dallas won it. And I think we've seen a number of times, look, you look at the team that went 73-9 in Golden State and then lost to the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers. They were a better team than the Cavs were. They just suffered injury. They suffered a suspension from Draymond Green. They suffered a number of setbacks there. And so Cleveland won, even though they were the inferior team. So a title shouldn't be the end-all be-all. I've said that before. I know my former co-host Wes used to kind of joke about that I don't care about titles. I do care about titles. Everybody wants a championship. I think that makes a lot of sense. But I don't think this should be the end-all be-all defining position. And if you're using you know, that as your barometer for success, then that's a problem. And I think, you know, Kevin Durant was forced at 27, and this is a good point that Arenas brings up in his Instagram post, at 27 he'd already accomplished as much as he could possibly accomplish as an NBA player. And the one thing he had in it was win the championship. And he went to the one option that was the best one for him. They had a lot of money available. He could thrive there. He could succeed. He did. He won a couple of championships. And I think it worked out very well for him. And no regrets about the situation. And I don't think as fans, anybody should have a problem with his decision. I know Oklahoma City fans felt betrayed. But, you know, a player has agency. It's not just free agency. It's his own life to decide whether or not he wants to move on. And for Perkins, who has been blessed as a young player to play alongside Ray Allen and Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, and to win a championship, like, he already had that success. He could have done whatever he did throughout the rest of his career, and it didn't matter. You know, but Kevin Durant doesn't have that same. He's not in the same stratosphere as Kendrick Perkins is. And so he had different criticisms lobbied his way, and it was unfair, and I think that's the bigger problem. But Perkins is wrong. Westbrook is a okay player. He's done okay for himself. He's accomplished a lot. I think a lot of – look, I remember covering the Thunder for years. I loved Westbrook's intensity. You'd love to see him go at it and his dogged determination, and he just refuses to back down. Those are the kinds of things that really appeal to fans and people in general. But he's also not half the player that Kevin Durant is. His offense is suspect. His defense is non-existent. Durant is a very, very solid defender and great scorer, an all-time great scorer. So I think it's absolutely ridiculous. And I think, again, it ties into Miami and LeBron James and everything else. Like, I understand why the Oklahoma City love affair with, you know, Westbrook and Durant took place, because those players were drafted there. Miami has never had that kind of success. They drafted, you know, Dwayne Wade, and they were very, very lucky to have done so. But if somehow they had managed to draft Chris Bosh the year after, and then Dwayne had chosen to leave in 2010 to Chicago, and Chris Bosh had elected to stay in Miami, would we have said that Dwayne Wade, you know, that Chris Bosh was a better player than Dwayne Wade? I mean, I understand there's a lot of supposing here, but I think the reality is that Dwayne is the best player in franchise history. And even if Chris had managed to have a start here that he did in Toronto, it wouldn't have made the same kind of impact as an individual player. And I think, you know, again, Westbrook chose to stay there. He also got paid a heck of a lot of money. And that's part of the problem, is that he's getting paid so much money that his contract is, well, it was thought to be unmovable until Houston took in there and stepped in and took one for the team. And luckily so, because I think this version of Miami's roster is much, much better than any version with Russell Westbrook on it. But either way, just wanted to touch on that a little bit, because it's going around, it's fun, and it's my show. I can do whatever the hell I want to. But thank you so much for listening. The Heat are off until they take on the Brooklyn Nets on Friday. I'm not sure if there will be a recap. There probably will not be, because it's the weekend and most of you don't listen to the show over the weekend. But either way, I wanted to talk about the Winslow news and Andre Iguodala and everything else. Thank you so much for listening. You can connect with me, as I said before, on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat, or email me at LockdownHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Romil, signing off and thanking you, as always, for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, Dean.